Hi, I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with William Remington, a managing director in Kroll's cyber risk practice based in the firm's London office. Over the course of a prominent 20-year career in technology, risk, and cybersecurity, William has significantly advanced the science and art of technical security testing and the critical role it plays in developing, implementing, and validating security defenses that can stand up to ever-evolving cyber attacks. To learn more about the Kroll Cyber Risk Group, visit kroll.com/cyber. William, great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Steve. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
So if you're like myself, William, and so many millions of other people around the world, you're probably not in your corporate offices today. Where are you calling in from?
I am in Southwest London. So yeah, okay. No, haven't been near an office for a good 9 weeks or so.
Right. Similar here. So we're all trying to make the most of it, but it's great to be on together and, have some dialogue to help people. William, tell us about your position in the cyber risk practice and what you do for Kroll's clients.
Sure. Okay, Steve. Yeah, I look after our proactive security service in the EMEA region. So as you all recall, so Kroll divides its cyber risk team geographically across North and South America, EMEA, and APAC, and I'm one of the managing directors that looks after the EMEA team. And so from a proactive perspective, I suppose that means everything from looking at the way companies or organizations organize themselves from a governance, risk, and compliance perspective around cybersecurity, looking at policies, procedures, processes, and the way those security teams function. So we help clients on that end of the spectrum. But then, as your introduction said, the other end, the technical end of the capability, I look after our attack and simulation teams, our penetration testing teams. Really putting companies through their paces to test those technical and human controls to make sure that they are functioning as well as they can and to help them get better at what they do.
So, William, I want to talk to you today about cybersecurity jobs, the workforce. Clearly, things are changing during this COVID-19 pandemic, but then on the other hand, they're not changing as much as we may have thought. We talk to a lot of CISOs, we talk to a lot of security leaders, and there's still a labor crunch. Cybersecurity Ventures predicts that there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs globally by the end of 2021, which is up from 1 million positions in 2015. And with those numbers being adjusted in light of the pandemic, we're still, as I say, facing a crunch. Can you give a view of the cyber labor situation in the EMEA region as it relates to the organizations you work with? And are you seeing, that same labor crunch, and how bad is it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Steve. I think certainly if we look short term for a moment, I would agree that the current situation globally, really, let alone EMEA, has thrown us all into sharp relief. And we've seen amazing reactions to it. And I mean that in its broader sense of the term, in that people almost tearing up the rule book of how they do things to make best use of the resource. And I've seen sort of two extremes of that, really. I've seen one large retailer who clearly can't open their shops anymore, and therefore their only route to market is online. But I've seen them furlough, as the expression is in the UK, but furlough their CISO, and you kind of think, well, how does that help security of your customers and all the rest of it in this particular time? But it's all about making the best use of the talent and the resource that any company has at any one time. And I suppose I see it from our own personal perspective as a team that continues to recruit and grow. And the CVs that we get through ourselves in terms of trying to grow our team across the region from the Middle East to Northern Europe. Really, really interesting and difficult times, I think, from that perspective. And I suppose that's why we see the rise of things like virtual CISOs and virtual DPOs and those sorts of almost like consulting gap filling type roles where corporates, you know, it's difficult to find that magic person who has got the right level of experience and nuance to deal with the board and the executive committee and the operational folk, as well as having the technical nous to keep his technology team on the straight and narrow at the same time. So, you know, these are difficult skills to find. They're difficult skills to nurture, actually. And as I say, finding that in one individual is really tricky. And I suppose that's where we try and help. I suppose companies like ours now, it's not only us, but we're looking at ways that we can bring the breadth of the experience of our 300 odd consultants to bear on a single problem or a single client, so you can make sure that you've got the right person in the right place at the right time to answer their questions and concerns and support them as best we can. I think you'll find everybody that works in this industry has this underlying sense of responsibility and care and a willingness to get involved and to help. I mean, above and beyond anything, we're in the business of helping make it a safer world to do digital business in, and supplying those skills is at the heart of what all of us are trying to do, no matter where you sit in the industry, I think.
The idea of furloughing a CISO is scary. You know, it's almost like a throwback to the days when, you know, security was an afterthought.
Well, extraordinary. I was really quite surprised by that. Really quite surprised. But I guess, you know, if you are, you know, fighting to survive and resources really are stretched and thin, then in the short term, you might say, well, look, you know, if that CISO, for example, has set up a truly effective and robust team that know what they're doing and can be trusted to get on with it for the short term, then maybe that is the right decision. But it does, as an outsider, not knowing the intricacies, it does strike you as a rather bizarre decision, doesn't it?
It does, although I guess it's always easy to second guess, you know, yes, Somebody else, but I appreciate those observations. So I'd like to talk for you to talk to us about the pros and cons of cybersecurity staff augmentation. Given the talent shortage and the growing adoption of remote work, which areas of cyber make sense to keep in-house and which to outsource?
For me, that is very much a maturity question. There are bits that kind of, you know, it's like that old adage of, well, where do I put my controls or how do I measure my controls? It's, you know, have you been through the right processes and journey to get you to a point where you have something that you are able to outsource or you are able to pass on to another party to do for you? And I think, you know, so in that respect, you know, security is no different from as if you were trying to outsource your, I don't know, your payables function or something in the old sort of outsourcing model. You can only outsource it or get somebody else to do it when you're very, very clear about what operationally it covers, what risks those are looking after on your behalf, making sure there's still that governance and accountability sitting within your organization to keep them honest, keep them on track, know what you're being told is tangible and is measurable. I mean, I think it was a property business recently, you know, outsource an awful lot of their security function, and then question themselves after the event knowing that actually there was nobody left in the business to be able to ask the difficult question and know what answer they're getting back is the right one or fit for purpose, etc. So it is a tricky one. There are elements which make an awful lot of sense to outsource, if you want to use that word, from the start. It's very rare to find in-house security functions which, for example, are massively up on their threat investigation, threat management type skills. Those are particularly niche. It's very rare to find day-to-day security operations that are massively on top of being able to respond to incidents. They might have experienced it once or twice, maybe three times. It might be a vaguely regular occurrence, unfortunately, as their careers have gone along. But to have specialist IR capabilities on a retainer or on tap when you need, I think, is a massively important part of running a tight ship. And as I said, the emergence of as the industry is calling it, VCISO, so virtual chief information security officers, virtual data protection officers, they're interesting programs because they're clearly looking for a broader expertise and a broader set of skills than, as I was saying before, that possibly you might find in a single individual. So sorry, I'm waffling on slightly, but a rather roundabout way of asking your question, but I think it really does, as I said at the beginning, depend on the maturity, the size, the complexity of the organization who's asking the question. And as I said, really being confident that if and when you do come to outsource a particular function, you're really doing it on a solid footing and knowing what service you're going to get in response and being able to keep that measured and keep that true to what you're after.
Being that there's so much to think through, a lot of which you just pointed out, I'm curious, do most of Kroll's clients that you're working with come to you with a finite plan around augmentation, telling you, exactly what positions they're looking at? Or is it more of an open-ended discussion they have and you're helping them figure out, exactly where they should be augmenting?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think for me personally, I would never want to assume anything. And by that I mean, I'm very much a believer of the philosophy, and indeed one of the frameworks that we built for our proactive work, we call it FAST, which is a four-letter acronym for flexible assurance, simulation, and training, because we want to make sure that our clients get the best bang for buck, and they get value from what we're proposing and what they are asking for, and to do that, we're very open about challenging them, in the nicest possible way, of course. But that F for flexibility is making sure that whatever they might be asking for, whatever we think would be a good fit, that we have that debate, that we have that discussion, and that we reach that sort of flexible compromise. And some of that is driven by the A word, the assurance, i.e., they come to us because they want comfort over a part of their security function or a part of their security governance, or they're wanting some level of assurance, and that helps tune the flexibility element to make sure that we get it right. And the S, therefore, for simulating stuff, I suppose would be in the terms of maybe some more of the proactive side of doing, testing and things like that. But the simulation could more broadly think about, what scenarios, what episodes, what situations that we're trying to help implement or help deliver within. And the T, the training bit, is, well, what are we all going to learn from this? You know, they've come to us with a proposition, with a problem. We've been through this process of discussion and all the rest of it. But unless we're really clear about what the learning objectives are, as I said right at the beginning, the people in this industry, we're all about making people get better and more secure at what they do. So the training element, the learning bit, is really, really important in our philosophy of working with our clients. So that's a long wind of an answer, but yes, when people come to us with, you know, William, Kroll, whatever, this is what we think we are after, you know, we have a very detailed framework and philosophy for challenging that and making sure that we're getting value for clients.
You touched on Kroll's VCSO program, which has an excellent reputation. I want to ask you about that. How does an organization assess the true value of the VCSO program? What is it that you share with them? What do they know going into that? Is it a dedicated person per se, where it's always that same, you know, virtual CISO they call upon? Or is it the collective talent pool of multiple people that they can tap into?
It's mostly the latter, Steve. Very much we will have a point of contact, a person that is their regular contact, but absolutely it is about making sure that we have available the right expertise in the room. So we're very open about the fact that, look, you know, me, I may not know, you know, everything there is about a particular topic in the security arena, but I know who to pick up the phone to and know where within our network we'll find the right capability and the right person to answer the question or to lead the piece of work or to, you know, to be the point of contact for a particular problem. And I think that's the beauty, certainly from my personal experience, the beauty of working at Kroll is that the vast majority of people that are in our team have all had previous careers somewhere else, have all got 10, 15, 20 years experience of doing other things in other places. And it's a really rich environment for that. And fantastic, therefore, to be able to offer that to a broad set of clients and address a broad set of problems and issues.
Now, that VCSO program, I'm curious, is it something that's being offered to companies who have a CISO, but then they're able to tap into this talent pool of other CISOs? Or is it sort of replacing or in place of a CISO, where maybe you have a CIO and then you have an IT security team and you're sort of filling in that position?
It's a bit of both, Steve. You know, we don't, you know, clearly where an organization already has a CISO, you know, we're not there to replace anybody or be there instead of them. I suppose for organizations that are mature enough and big enough, you know, financially and operationally to have a CISO, you know, we're there to be in their toolkit, if you like, be there to be lent on when they need help with a particular issue or a particular topic. So that's one end of the scale, absolutely. And then, as you were alluding to latterly, yeah, absolutely, we're around to help those that maybe aren't of the size or scale that require a CISO as a full-time, you know, employee. But clearly they have elements that they want some additional oversight or steer on to help them through maybe setting up a security program, or maybe, as we saw recently over the last couple of years, and this ventures into sort of virtual DPO type territory as well, but getting set up for dealing with GDPR and all the regulatory and process and control elements that come with that to help them get up and running with things. I suppose the long-term view might be that, you know, you might be there to help set up the function and get things running such that you can hand it on. And that's very much my view and philosophy on things, almost to the extent of, you know, you want to see a CISO almost make themselves redundant. That's maybe a bit of an outrageous thing to say, but but in the same way as companies over the years got themselves used to dealing with health and safety and getting that embedded in governance structures and the way things work and operate and really being granular within a manufacturing environment, for example, you know, our objective really should be to get security absolutely bedded into ordinary everyday work and processes and the way that people think and govern the data that they're handling.
Well, just listening to you, you know, describe the services and the capabilities, you know, gives me, you know, a warm feeling if I'm a CIO, if I'm a C-suite executive, and if I'm realistic about the market conditions, because let's face it, the average turnover for a CISO position right now is between 18 and 24 months. That's the highest in the IT industry. And, you know, I mean, you mentioned a furlough before, that's unexpected, but otherwise that position has been turning over. Is your group equipped, and do you sometimes help companies who are in between CISOs for whatever the reason might be that there was turnover?
Yes, we've come across that, certainly. And we've also had opportunities to help clients in interview processes, you know, for finding them a replacement or finding them the next level up, or for particular skill sets. So yeah, it really is a flexible model to help the guys with what they need when they need it. Yeah.
That's interesting. So you'll actually get involved with the interview process.
That's right. That's right. That's something we can help with as well. Yeah.
Well, William, I really appreciate you taking the time today. That was great feedback. Invaluable. I'd like to have you back on and chat some more at a future date, if that's good with you.
Steve, that would be super. I've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was William Remington, a managing director in the cyber risk practice of Kroll, a division of Duff & Phelps based in the firm's London office. To learn more about the Kroll Cyber Risk Group, visit kroll.com/cyber. You can listen to all of our podcasts at cybercrime.radio.